Fear the Walking Dead Season 2, Episodes 1 and 2 are over, but we are just getting started here on the Fear the Walking Dead post-show recap. And now, here are the two guys who are taking a zombie cruise to nowhere. I'm Rob Sestrini's Josh Wigler.
This is kind of not unsimilar to how cruises actually are, right? Like, there's a lot of getting sick on the water. This is what's in the news lately, anyway. Like, people are eating things and bad things are happening.
Yeah, some of these cruises are not worth it.
Were you ever a cruise guy, Rob? Have you ever been on a cruise?
Ted Cruz?
I'm not talking politics here.
Okay. No, I get very seasick. That I have been on a few different cruises, which I like not have gone far, and I've not really enjoyed it. Notably, I went on like a gambling cruise with Nicole, like out of like left out of like Freeport.
Wow,
like for like right in like the early days of us dating. I was like, oh, this will be fun on a Saturday. And I like they go like, you know, 10 miles off of Long Island where it's like it's international waters. You can gamble here. And we went on the gambling cruise, and I was just, like, sick to my stomach. And really, there's no better way to impress your date than just becoming, like, completely seasick.
Yeah, just vomit everywhere, just gross.
Right, right.
And really Nicole, not great.
Right, she was somebody, she's like Strand, that she just, you know, her dad had a boat. They, like, would go on the water all the time. So, not very impressive or
Nicole
masculine.
Was like Strand, like she was radioing people and being kind of mysterious and a little sketchy and is maybe like a super criminal mastermind or some sort of CIA secret agent.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, it sounds like Nicole.
Yeah, so... No, I have not done well on boats. Like, I could do okay on, like, on a speedboat. Like, if the boat's moving, but sort of, like, the boat just, like, sort of, like, bobbing in one place.
So you would go to the Nature Conservancy?
Yeah, I think I would.
You'd have the happy pills, and you would just, like, call it there.
Yeah, I would have. If they would have given me a happy pill that night, I would have taken it.
All right, fair enough.
All right. Anyway, so Josh, here we are. Fear the Walking Dead is back. First off, let's start with the mea culpa.
Mea culpa.
Last week. So,
Fear a culpa.
Last Sunday night, Josh Wigler and I ended up getting very distracted with Josh's invitation for me to go with him to the Game of Thrones.
Are you pinning this
premiere
on me? That's how you're framing it.
No, I forced you to have a good time. No. What I'm trying to say is that I have no clout and I did not get invited to the Game of Thrones.
I bet your clout score is really good.
It's okay. And I got invited as Josh's guest to the Game of Thrones season 6 premiere.
Well, let's not forget Josh which one of us invited. Has the blue check mark here, Rob.
Yes, Josh got invited to from the work that he does, the outstanding work he does for the Hollywood Reporter, talking about Game of Thrones. He was invited there too, and he was very generous to take me with him, and that really just threw the whole Fear of the Walking Dead podcast recording schedule for a loop. And then we were both traveling back from Los Angeles to the East Coast because this is where Josh lives. And then I was visiting family and it was a very busy week for me.
Tried to get things going on. We were not able to do it. Very sorry about that. We are back here today. We're going to talk about episodes 1 and episodes 2. And we will continue podcasting every week of Fear the Walking Dead as far as this thing goes.
Yes. Yeah, so here we are to talk about all of this. And so Josh, let's jump right in with the question that everybody still has. Yes, throw your life vest on. So, who did Negan hit with the baseball bat?
We're not talking about Negan.
Oh.
I told you I'm done with the Negan. I'm out on all of that until Walking Dead proper returns. But
I think it was Strand.
Yeah, I don't think so. I think Strand's in this for the long haul.
Okay.
I feel like we got to start wondering who is Strand going to hit with a baseball bat.
Wow, what a turn of events it would be if Strand turned out to be one of Negan's guys.
Oh my God, if he was one of the saviors?
Yeah.
He's one of the sailors.
The sailors. Okay, now, so here we are through two episodes of Fear the Walking Dead. And really, the show is completely a bit of a different format due to the vehicle of the boat.
Yeah.
We are on the boat, and really, we're just sailing around, going from port to port. To me, in some ways, it feels a little bit kind of like Star Trek, where, you know, we have the ship And then we're sort of like landing on different planets every week and like going on like away missions.
Now, when you describe it that way, Rob, this sounds like an incredible, incredible, incredible time on television. Like, that's great. Like, episode 3, are we going to check in with the Romulans? Is that happening?
I think that there's basically the equivalent of that.
Are we sailing toward a Borg cliffhanger? Is that happening? Is Travis Manawa going to be abducted and turned into Lacutus of Manawa?
Wow. Well, you do get assimilated into the zombie collective right. on Fear the Walking Dead. But
there's really no hope of coming back.
Really no hope to come back, right.
So far, I mean, who knows? Maybe Fear the Walking Dead will be the show that introduces the virus cure.
Maybe.
Probably not.
But I kind of feel like that's where we're going. I feel like we're just sort of like going around, like taking the boat from different, like from port to port every week. Like, I feel like there's going to be very few episodes where we're just at sea the whole time. I know we had a bet going into this. How many episodes would it be before they lost the boat? I don't think we're losing the boat. I think season 2, the boat is the Herschel's farm of season 2.
Yeah, we're on a boat, Rob. And this is what I had said before. This is what I said during the feedback show. I think we're going to be on this thing for a while. I think Fear the Walking Dead is really committing to the boat. We are seeing how that can work in these 2 episodes. As you mentioned, there's a lot of these quote unquote away missions, making land, seeing new people, exploring stories in that direction. I think we're going to get a lot of that. I think that there's also sort of this overarching narrative, a few of them actually. The big one that we're seeing in this episode, this bubbling Strand story underneath the surface, that he's got a very clear agenda that the rest of the people don't know about, although Salazar is starting to get a little wise to it. And there's also, it's not Negan out there, we don't think, that's pursuing these people, but there is somebody out there who seems to be roughing things up on the water. Let's call him Segan for now.
Segan, yeah, well done.
We can call him Segan for now. And there's a guy out there who is shooting up other boats, and you got to imagine there's going to be some kind of clash there. So there are 2 stories that are definitely permeating through these first 2 episodes that I think we'll be seeing throughout at least the first half of this season. But I agree that I think that a lot of what we're going to get from Fear the Walking Dead this year are kind of standalone-ish episodes. Fringe used to call this the myth alone. An episode
monster of the week.
It's kind of monster of the week ish but also pushes the overall story forward. So there's, you know, a little bit of the mythology, but it also can stand on its own a little bit. I think that this week was a good example of that. So I think that we're in myth alone territory this year.
Yes. These are the voyages of the USS Abigail. It's 5 years mission to explore strange new lands, to seek out any remaining life and civilization, to boldly go where no Manawa has gone before.
Oh, that's really great. I feel like Strand would be an interesting Starfleet captain. Like, that's like a type of character that we haven't really gotten, at least to my knowledge. I don't feel like we've ever gotten a Starfleet captain as your main character who's just an asshole.
No, probably not at the center of a ship or a show. So we'll see what happens there with Strand. All right, but let's talk about these 2 episodes that have happened so far. I guess let's go back to the premiere of Fear the Walking Dead season 2 and really began where everybody's just sort of like loading up the ship. It looked like some time had passed from what we saw in the finale, where it seems like that Los Angeles just got bombed in between.
Torched. Yeah, that whole cobalt thing really happened. It happened hard.
Yeah. And so it seems like, though, that, like, what happened? Like, Strand and Nick and everybody were like, okay, let's go off in the boat and let's just leave Travis and Maddie and Chris and everybody on land while we go like sail around.
You think that he was trying to ditch them?
I don't know what was going on.
I don't know. I think that, you know, Strand, I don't understand exactly why Strand is bringing all these people with him in the first place.
No, I don't understand either. And maybe, you know, we did see Daniel opening up that treasure chest and like seeing like a little bit more of Strand's plan. But I think that his motives are very unclear right now.
Super unclear. I mean, I think that that's, you know, he was already the big mystery character at the end of season 1. I think that he continues to be the big mystery character here. He obviously has an agenda. He's talking to somebody on his sat phone at the end of episode 2 saying, I need to get there by sundown. I'll be there. We don't know what he's going to do when he gets there. And I don't understand, you know, he seems to be as frustrated with the Manawa family as at least half of the audience. You know, he just does not understand why they are here, and yet he's bringing them with him. So I don't get why he needs to have the Manawas with him. Maybe he has some purpose for them. Is he going to, like, I don't know, do some human trafficking thing? Is that why he needs these people? But otherwise, it just seems like a lot of dead weight.
Yeah, I mean, it did seem like that he had this plan from early on. I can't imagine that the human trafficking thing was in play this early on.
Yeah, hard to see. I mean, he does take a shine to Nick. He loves Nick, and maybe keeping Nick in check involves having Nick's loved ones around. I don't know. But when the show did pick up this year, there was a sense of, you know, this sense of urgency that the ship really needed to set sail pretty quickly. L.A. is on fire. I don't know how much time has passed considering the Manawas start lugging poor dead Liza's body around with them for a while. It didn't look like she had decomposed that much.
Yeah. No, I was really surprised because I felt like it was going to be a major plot point in the first episode that Liza's body, oh, she's going to turn. They right. don't know. She's going to turn. And I really thought that, okay, oh, she's going to kill Chris. I thought it was going to be a very similar scenario to what we actually saw in the second episode where the younger daughter ended up turning and biting the mom. Like, why didn't Liza turn? It didn't make any sense to me. I'm like, okay, well, maybe it's so early on that it's not happening that fast. But when the little girl took the pills in the second episode and she immediately turned and attacked her mom, like, why didn't that happen with Liza?
Well, because Travis shot her in the head.
Oh, is that what happened?
At the end of season one. It's been a while. It's been a minute. But that being said, I was kind of wondering, you know, wouldn't it have been great if Travis was just such a bad shot that he shot her in the head but didn't kill her? So then she dies of the wound and then comes back as a zombie because the brain was not effectively destroyed.
Oh, boy.
Now, that would be, you would really feel bad about yourself after
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we did spend a while on the burial at sea of Liza in, you know, I really kind of forgot about her as a character, but really.
She had Carol upside towards the end of season one. Like, she was the character that was starting to show that she was, like, tough and battle hardened and a little bit ready for this world. And then she just, in the escape from the big military compound, she suffered a bite that we didn't even really see. Yeah. And it's like, oh, that sucks, because she was actually kind of cool.
Yeah. So yeah, they spent a little while on her funeral service there in the premiere, certainly.
Yeah. Yeah. And Chris, poor Chris, Travis's son, is really taking this hard. You know, he's really mad. He punches his dad in the face. That doesn't seem like a great idea. Just generally don't do that.
Right, right. Yeah, Chris is going through a hard time, and there's a lot of angst among the kids on this show, certainly. I think that's a thing going on Fear the Walking Dead.
That's a thing that's going on Fear the Walking Dead. But Chris, Chris, in his defense, I think has a lot of reason to be angry. We talked about this a lot towards the end of Fear the Walking Dead season one, or at the end of it, rather, when Travis decides to shoot Liza, and Liza's like, please kill me. I don't want to turn into one of those things. Travis does it, and he doesn't even give Chris the opportunity to say goodbye. Like, he's like, he just does it right then and there in that moment. And you get this scene from Chris in the premiere where he's like, I didn't even get to say goodbye to her. And it's like, yeah, maybe that would have helped. You know, they could have just had like some moment. It wasn't like Liza was about to turn. They could have afforded an hour. You know, we could have just like done 1 hour of, you know, parting of ways, say goodbye, explain why this needs to happen. And I feel like Travis isn't going to get punched in the face as a result. And Chris isn't going to go into this tailspin of depression.
Right. I mean,
still probably going to be bummed, but he's not going to be like morbidly depressed.
She did not have the same will to go out like Deanna did.
No. Oh, God. Yeah. Do you think that they've got grain on the open seas?
I hope so.
Yeah. The USS Grain.
We've got fish.
We've
all
got
the different salmon.
We have salmon. We have eel. Arctic char.
Yeah. So they're spending a lot of time with Chris, and he certainly seems like he's taking his aggression out with a pickaxe in episode two. Let's talk about, like, at the end of season two, or at the end of season one, we felt like that we were starting to see some of the characters in Maddie and Travis, like, really, okay, they're starting to be real badasses now.
Right.
That, okay, and Maddie, we felt like maybe was more of the badass in season one, and Travis, when he has to you know, he comes around at the end of season one.
But for a guy who was, you know, talking a lot at like a really big Jack London game in the beginning of the season, in the beginning of the series, he was definitely soft for most of it.
Okay. So he comes around as well. Do you feel like that trajectory has been kept up in season two?
You know, not to get into spoilers on another AMC show, Better Call Saul. But Better Call Saul season one ends in a way where you really think that the trajectory of Bob Odenkirk's character is going to go one way. And then when we get into season two, things kind of backpedal a little bit. You know, things sort of slip back, backslide, if you will.
Slip and Jimmy.
Things sort of backslide with Slip and Jimmy just a little bit in terms of he's not quite going in the direction you thought he was going in. I think with Fear the Walking Dead, the way that season one wrapped up with Travis pulling the trigger on his own wife, you know, granted his ex-wife, but still a huge, huge moment for him. We can quibble about the mechanics of that and whether or not he should have allowed a little bit more time to grieve and all of that. I certainly think he should have, but he went there. He chose to go there. He was finally ready to do something like that. And we kind of took that as a signal of Travis is ready to start embracing this world. This is going to be a guy who's going to do what's necessary, what's right for his family. I'm not seeing a ton of that here this season so far. We're still getting a lot from Travis and Madison, both of them being like, we got to save people. We've got to help people. Travis having a lot of conversations with the guy on the compound this week. I think his name was George. Maybe I'm getting that wrong. And he's, you know, he seems like he's like, I can talk to him. Let's talk to him. He still wants to do that. And it's still early enough in the apocalypse where I think that they want to still hang on to as much humanity as they possibly can. But I think that season one really ended in a way where it was setting up that these people are going to be really fearsome and ready to take on the apocalypse. And so far, still not so much for me. I think that they're still really just trying to hang on to some humanity.
Yeah, I think that everybody is having a lot of conversations of maybe we should bring this person on the boat. We should bring this person on the boat. And I identify with Strand. I feel like that he is entitled to be as frustrated with everybody of like, no, there's no more room for people on the boat. Stop inviting people onto the boat. It's not your boat.
Get off my damn boat.
Yeah, you're all lucky to be here. You're my guests. Stop inviting more people on the boat.
There's no more room for the boat. The boat is going to sink at a certain point if we just keep adding more people.
But can't we just bring this one? This person seems nice.
But this kid's so cute. Look at him.
Yeah.
Look at his little cheeks.
Listen to this guy on the CB radio. He sounds very friendly.
Yeah. Or if you're Alicia, he sounds hot.
Yeah, Jack.
Yeah, let me talk to Jack. Do you think Jack is Segan?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I did find the CB radio subplot in the first episode to be a bit of a stretch for Alicia.
It's like the apocalypse version of the internet, right? Like, you know, they don't have Wi-Fi, they don't have Tinder, they don't have anything like that, but they got CB radios out on the open sea, and that's how you're staying connected in. That's like your new social media.
So, what are you wearing? What are you up to? Over. Yeah.
Life vest. It's pretty hot. It's got a blinking light that I can activate if I'm lost.
Right. Yeah.
It was a weird story. It was a really weird story. You know what's interesting for me, and I know you're not going through this at all, Rob, but I binged The 100 since we last talked Fear of the Walking Dead. I watched that whole show. I'm basically up to date on it right now. And Alicia
The Hunch, indeed.
Alicia Denham Carey, who is the actor who plays Alicia on this show, same name. She is a very prominent character on The 100. She plays a character named Commander Lexa, not a Starfleet commander, but a commander of a great warrior army all the same. And she is a major badass. That character is more badass than every single character on Fear of the Walking Dead combined, and it's not close. She is capable of great violence, great leadership decisions, very emotional, super complicated character. One of the great characters on TV of the last few years, I really think. And so I'm thinking about that character while I'm watching Alicia on this show, and a few things come to mind. is she's got range. You know, this is an actor who really ought to be going places, because if she can play
that on a boat.
She's on a boat. She really, you know, feels like she could sail to many different corners of her career with the way that she plays Lexa versus the way she plays Alicia. So that's the first thought, is that this is a really talented performer. The second thought is, just in contrast to that character, Lexa, it is such a bummer to see Alicia, who is just such like a kid, such a teen, who is really difficult to watch, and seeing her on the CB radio really obsessively into the Jack thing. Like, can we go pick up Jack? He seems really hot. He seems really cool. I just feel like there's so much more that we can do. You know, this actor has proven what she is capable of. I feel like we got to be able to give her a little bit better of a storyline.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't see her do too much in the first season of Fear the Walking Dead, but it just seems like this is a very bad idea to be telling, like, we've got a lot of stuff. We've got a lot of supplies on this boat. Like, this boat, we've got, we can turn salt water into fresh water. We've got guns. We've got fish.
We've got a guy who's really good at getting fish.
Right. So that seems like
everybody here is super gullible.
Tactical error. I mean, we did see the sort of destroyed boat in the water, and we saw Strand wondering about what was going on with the radar. So do you feel like that there's any sort of question whether or not that the person she was talking to on the CB radio is the same people responsible for this?
Well, she even says at one point, right? Like, she says, like, I'm sorry, Jack, we're not going to be able to come and get you. And he's like, no worries, bro. I'll come find you.
Right.
Like, oh, okay. Yeah. So this guy definitely seems like he is on their tail. Not great. And Alicia is really inviting that. I mean, I don't know if we want to lay this completely at Alicia's feet. We might just want to say that Jack and Segan and all of these people are just really, really good at hunting people on the open sea, and they're going to be coming anyway. It goes back to the big debate of, was Rick Grimes wrong to push the buttons of the Saviors, or was that conflict coming no matter what? Except it's probably not as clear cut in this case. It's like, Alicia, stay off the CB radio.
Yeah, I mean, she's talking to people on the phone, on the CB radio, and telling them about what she can see, where she is, what they have. It's pretty bad.
Yeah, it's not great. It's a bad call. Let's talk about the other Clark sibling.
Yes.
Nick is back.
He's back.
Guess who's back?
Nick.
And his jacket.
And the jacket is back.
It
has not gone anywhere. What do you think of Nick not only swimming in full clothes, but swimming in the jacket?
I think that Nick has...
That's his look, right?
It's his look. I think we now have to accept it. There have been multiple opportunities for Nick to change his clothes. We saw him... He was doing some other things with fashion, right? I mean, it's not like he's only wearing the coat. We see him in like a deep V-neck at one point. We see him turning that deep V-neck into like a head turban at one point, because that's just how you keep cool out on the open sea. Mm-hmm. So he's trying stuff, but he really loves that jacket.
Really loves the jacket.
We even see him. He takes a shower in episode 2, and there is like a shirt and tie, like one of Strand's fancy suits. It's hanging there, and he could really very easily just slip into one of those. You got to imagine. He's like, nope. I want the grandpa jacket. It's what I need. It's how I feel good about myself.
I found the swimming sequence in the first episode to be especially frustrating.
How come?
Just, you know, it was just swimming in the water. This is not a cruise, first of all. This is like, really, we got a lot going on here. No time for swimming. Also, swimming in the jacket was also frustrating, and you knew something bad was going to happen. And sort of like the real slow motion montage of swimming in the water with there being walkers in the water,
right,
or swimmers in the water. It was just like, I think that
what are we calling them? They're not walkers. They're not
swimmers.
Walkers. You're calling them swimmers, not floaters.
Well, I think
different connotation.
More than floating, I think.
Yeah,
but. To me, I think it was just sort of like trading on, oh, isn't this cool that there's, you know, zombies in the water?
Well, you know, in the show's defense, it was about 50 minutes into the first episode, and we really hadn't gotten anything like that. So you got to imagine that a zombie showing up with 10 minutes to go.
Yeah, I guess
you would
so.
Hope. You would hope. What do you think about the way that the show is doing walkers this season, or swimmers, if you want to call them that? This is something that we'd been wondering a little bit, and it had been teased by the writers a little bit in the lead up to season two of like, hey, we figured out how to do zombies on the water. Is this the answer to just have them floating around and like capable of kind of like, you know, taking little bites of you if you're passing by? They're like piranhas.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's really has not been that exciting. I mean, this is for us, you know, it's not like that Fear the Walking Dead is a brand new show. We've been seeing zombies on TV for 6 years now on the regular Walking Dead.
Right.
So just the novelty of zombies on this show is not enough to carry it. Even if maybe even at points, and season two, I think widely considered to be the worst season of The Walking Dead, is, you know, that there was, you know, different zombie things that they did there. You need more than just zombies.
Yeah, no, I think so. Well, we're getting it. We'll see when Segan shows up. That's going to be a big deal.
Yeah, we'll see. I also feel like that the show is just really struggling in terms of like creating interesting act breaks. Like sometimes it'll just be like the end of a conversation and then we're in commercial. Where I feel like just like the pacing of this show, I feel like seems a little bit off.
There's something to, it's like the boat is backing up at every act break. It's like, yeah, reversing in the water a little bit. It's like, oh, can't go there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know exactly how to fix that, but that does seem like, you know, there's, I maybe they're just setting the stage for future menaces to come, but it does seem like that that's an area where they could use some help.
Yeah,
as well.
I think that Fear the Walking Dead, and I think we saw this in season one, so it shouldn't be a big surprise now that season that this show, Fear the Walking Dead versus Walking Dead proper, it's a much slower burn.
Yes.
You know, L.A. burned really fast, ultimately.
And San Diego.
Yeah, and San Diego, and apparently everywhere up to Colorado, half the country. It's definitely a slower burn. It's a show that moves at a slower clip, at a more deliberate pace of just, you know, really drilling down and looking at these people and exploring their interpersonal dynamics and what's going on in this family and what's going on in this makeshift family, and really, really just looking at that with the very occasional jump scare involving walkers. You know, it's a little more action packed towards the end of season one. But by and large, I think that it's just it's a slower show than Walking Dead, and I think it's that way by choice. Whether or not that's going to float your boat or the Abigail is, you know, your mileage will vary on that. But I think that that is very much intentional on the part of the show. I feel like it could use a little bit of an accelerated pace, but that being said, we heard from Strand that if they speed things up too much, the engine's going to give out. So gotta go slow.
Okay, well, let's talk about the action from this week's episode in closer focus, and talk about how we ended up with this lighthouse and really spent most of the episode dealing with this family living at the lighthouse and what was going on there and their way of life. And we see that there is a guy who lives in the lighthouse. And what is his name?
I believe it's George.
George and his family. And we did have the Walking Dead trope, which I've talked about many times before, that once the wife reveals that she has a medical condition, she will not make it outside of the episode.
She's dead.
She's dead.
It's not gonna work out well. She's gone. You can count on it.
Right.
Now. Doesn't matter if you recognize her from The Shield. Doesn't matter if she's a recognizable actor. That person's gone. That person's dead.
Anytime a character on Walking Dead or Fear the Walking Dead says that they have a condition that will not get better, that person is as good as dead.
Dead. Gone.
Yes, that's code. Anyway, so, and they will also not die from the condition that they say they have.
No, they will die from zombies.
From zombies.
Or someone's going to shoot them in the face.
That's right.
Or both.
Yeah. And so we ended up with these two new kids on the episode and another kid, Seth Douche.
Seth Douche. Yeah. Seth Douche, I feel like, is my favorite kid that we have seen on Fear the Walking Dead, though.
Yes. Harry and Willa were the other two kids.
Harry and Willa and Seth Douche. Seth Douche. I like Seth Douche. I don't want to call him Seth Douche.
Why? Why did you like him so much?
I liked Seth Douche because he
kept Harry from getting on the boat.
Yeah, that's really it. It's, you know, he really, I think, did us a huge solid by coming back there, making sure that Harry gets off the boat. It's probably not going to work out well for Seth and Harry. I bet we never find out. But he spared us from having another child on the show for the long term.
I mean, we have a lot of kids already on the show.
It's a lot of kids. A lot of kids. I don't think we could have handled Harry.
Really? I mean, between Chris and Alicia and Nick, that's already three precocious teens.
That's a strong trio of teens. Then, I don't think we needed more.
Yeah, then we were going to add Harry and Willa to the mix.
Willa. Willa's not going.
Well,
anywhere.
They were going to add it. I mean, that's what Maddie was arguing for. We should take these two kids on the boat.
Right.
And then ended up with just Harry. And then thankfully, Seth Douche came along. And Strand is like, go put this kid back where you found him.
Yeah, I loved that. I thought that was great. Strand is like, no way. We have so many kids here already. And what is he like? Straight up says, like, kids are the definition of dead weight.
That's right. That's right. Speaking for the viewers,
yes,
of Fear the Walking Dead.
Unbelievable.
Strand.
Thank you, Strand. Appreciated. But yeah, I mean, I thought that they seemed like good kids. You know, I don't think that there was anything about them as children that seemed like they were particularly off. I just feel like we couldn't afford to have them on the show. And what would have happened to Harry's action figure collection if he had left? It would have just stayed there. That's like really sad for somebody who's a big believer in the Toy Story thing, that the toys come to life when you leave them alone.
Yeah. Josh, did you get anything out of the Lighthouse family story this week?
What I got out of the Lighthouse family story this week was, you know, sort of this question that Travis and George are kind of batting back and forth of, like, I think you look at the fence scene as an example of this. I think that there's, you know, they're working on the fence and George is saying, yeah, we're staying here. And Travis is like, why are you just giving up? And George says, we're not giving up. We're mending the fence. And it's this idea of, you know, the world is the way that the world is right now. Nature is fighting back. This is just the tide. We have to lean into the tide, and you can fruitlessly fight against it. You can really try to make something work, but the inevitable is here. This is the end of the world, and I'm not going to let the end of the world stop me from living my life while it's going on. And this is what this family had done. You know, they were survivalists. They were living out here on their own. George is a guy who really believes in man's relationship with nature. And as the world is falling down all around them, George is not willing to abandon his home and his way of life. He would rather die with family than die on the open road and die trying to fight this thing. And I think that that's probably going to be a little bit of a theme this season, as we are, as we've noted already, wandering kind of aimlessly. I mean, Strand has a few ideas of what he wants to do.
Mexico,
maybe. But the Manawas and Madison and all of those people and the Salazars, they don't really have a super clear direction other than just surviving. And are we going to
JSS.
Reach JSS? They're JSSing, you know, the JSS Abigail. Are they going to reach a point where wandering around is going to be enough, you know? Or, and this is kind of ironic, are they going to want their own Herschel's farm? You know, if this is the Herschel's farm of season two, is the Abigail that this is what we're going to be on, is it almost preferable for these people to find a place where they can plant roots and just let life continue to happen? And we saw that a lot on Walking Dead proper as well, as the group gets to Alexandria and faces these types of questions. So I think that this was a mirror into what we're looking at for the rest of the season, just sort of thematically. It's going to be, do you just sit down and let your life happen while you still have a life that can happen? Or are you really going to fight this thing? And what's the better answer? And I don't think that the show has a very clear opinion on it quite yet, although clearly it did not work out very well for George's family.
So how about this left turn that came up in the Lighthouse story, where Nick is like going through the office in the Lighthouse and he ends up finding a globe which contains a bunch of pills. I'm like, yeah. Oh, here we go again with the Nick doing drugs story. But Nick immediately identifies these as some sort of cyanide pills.
Right.
And Nick just says, look, I know my narcotics. Okay. I know the difference between drugs and poison.
Yeah. Fun pills and dead pills.
Yes. And that Nick, I thought that was a very odd reference that he chose to use. That he said, like, hey, this guy's planning on Jonestowning this whole family.
Yeah.
Like, I'm surprised that Nick is really on top of Jonestown.
Yeah, well, he was jonesing for a fix. He was jonestowning for a fix.
Yeah, what did you think of that subplot of that George who's planning on feeding a poison to his family?
It made sense to me from his perspective of, like, you know, eventually things are going to get so bad that it's like, hey, let's just take this and call it, you know?
Then what about Willa finding her pill?
Not great. Not great. That's why you don't keep the pills within reach of children.
Now, I thought that Nick put it back. Did, like, Nick end up moving it to a different spot? It seemed like it was on a high shelf.
Are we going to blame Nick for this one as well?
Why not?
You know, why not? Just add it to the list. Add it to the list. But I feel like, you know, I'm kind of curious about Nick this season. Nick, who is coming off as a little bit more sure of himself, a little bit more useful. You know, Strand has tried to drill into Nick that, like, you've got a purpose and you can help out and you can be of use. You know, you are an addict and you know need better than just about anybody else was, like, his big speech to him in season one. But with Nick, and Nick, the way that he has been coming across this season so far, he's been trying to be helpful. He's been saying to Travis, like, if you need me to help, you know, your son, I'm happy to do it. I understand at-risk youths better than anybody else. There's a confidence to him in those scenes. And then we see him going around fishing for narcotics. Like, it looks like he is going around looking for a fix. But ultimately, my read of that was that that's not what he was doing. He suspected that something weird was happening here at George's compound and tried to seek it out. Was that your read, or do you think that Nick was trying to find drugs?
I don't know if he was trying to find drugs, but I think that he was looking for whatever. Like, we've seen Nick do this a lot, I feel like, of just, like, sneaking around, looking for things.
We totally have, and that's in character with what we've seen in the past, and that was very memorable in season one when he seemed like he was totally cool again, and the reason he was totally cool was because he was sneaking the morphine drip like a total goon. He was, like, under the bed and just, like, you know, sneaking that in. But I think that what was interesting in this episode is Nick, you know, he's hanging out with Harry and Willa. He's hanging out with Alicia. And then when he goes off with Alicia at the end of the night, he's kind of like, there's something off about this place. And Alicia's the one who's like, there's something off about every place now. Everything's off about every place. But Nick seems to be really tuned into the fact that something weird is happening here. And I think combined with the fact that he takes these, you know, he finds these kill pills and brings them to Travis and Madison and is like, hey, this is what's going on here. I feel like Nick was intentionally looking for something. I think that it was kind of a subversion of this idea that we've seen with Nick in the past where he is really hunting down drugs for himself just because he wants to get high. He wants to do this thing. He wants to really satisfy this id. I feel like we're seeing a little bit of Detective Nick. I think we're trying.
Detective Nick.
I think that the show is trying to redeem Nick a little bit, and I think that we're moving away from that stuff.
Josh, to me, the two characters that I'm most interested in on this show are, of course, Strand and Daniel. Yeah. I think that, to me, what I like about these characters, and I think what I like about most of the Walking Dead characters that I like, I feel like that they are, you know, pragmatic, and they both understand what is going on and are not operating under circumstances just like it's any old regular day. Like, they're not acting like this is some sort of inconvenience happening right now. They are dealing with that new reality. And for me, I wouldn't even mind if they left the Manalwas at the lighthouse in this episode and just went out to go have some sort of a contentious relationship out on the open seas. Obviously, that's not happening, but I do love Daniel and Strand in that relationship.
It's great because, you know, Salazar is a guy that we know from his past that he has dealt with some stuff. You know, he had his big story about the Civil War that he witnessed and how that really shows you who people are. And once you see the end of, you know, society, once you see the end of civilized man, you know how far things can plummet from there. And that's the world that he's living in now, just on a much grander, far-reaching scale, on a really global apocalyptic scale. But he is somebody who is uniquely situated for something like this. He has been through the crap before, and now he is in it again. What I do really like is the contentiousness between him and Strand, because as you point out, these are two guys that have, you know, similar skill sets or at least similar outlooks in, I just have to cut forward. I just have to do what I have to do here, and things are fine. Like, I'm going to adjust to it. And they can't get on the same page, or at least they aren't getting on the same page yet. And that's because I think that Strand doesn't think that there are other people on the boat who are really at his level, probably other than Salazar. I think that he has to know that Salazar is at least suspicious of what's going on with Strand. And I think Salazar similarly recognizes in Strand a fellow traveler in the sense that this is a guy who can hold his own. But I think that he also sees this is a guy who is doing some weird, wacky stuff that is not necessarily going to be in our best interest. So he's really internalizing a lot of that. Both of these guys are. And I feel like that conflict is going to come to a head. It's a shame because I would really love to see them just get it together. Because if those two became a power couple on the show, they'd be the most dangerous people that we've seen on The Walking Dead.
Yeah. What do you think Strand is doing with this boat?
I don't know. I really don't. You know, there's
it's not his boat. It's not Penny's boat. So yeah. Whose boat is it?
Whose boat is it? So, you know, there's a lot of different possibilities for who Strand is. And who Strand is could open the show or close the show in certain directions. I mean, is he a criminal? Is he a con man? Is he a grifter? I think that that's probably the first place that you're thinking, that he is up to no good. He's solemnly swearing he is up to no good, and that's why he's in the cell when we see him in season one. Does he know the people who have the USS Abigail, and that's why he is able to go there and know so much about it? Was that a grift that he was working on? Is there something like that? Another possibility is, like, is he government? Is that why he was being trapped by the government? Is he like a dangerous guy? Is he like a James Bond type? Is that why he wears so many awesome suits? I don't know. I'm very confused about him and what he wants and who he's trying to get to. I think that there's also the possibility of like a much more personal answer. Could it be that like he has a daughter or a son and he is trying to reach that person and that's who he's talking to? He's like, I'm coming to pick you up. Is it something like that? Is this like sort of his, is he like the Dwayne The Rock Johnson of this San Andreas story where he is just braving apocalyptic circumstances to get to his child against all odds? That was one thing that I was thinking, but in terms of where it's actually going, who the heck knows? Who knows? But it's obviously a big story this season and one to watch.
Why does he need so many Manawas to pull off whatever he's doing?
How many Manawas does it take to get
Salazar's?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. You love Daniel Salazar, but I think that his daughter is the worst character on the show.
Yeah. Yeah. She's just kind of there.
She's just there. Ophelia.
Yeah.
She really has no clear purpose for being on the show. They are really giving her nothing to do. At least when Sean Hattusey was on the show, she had something to do.
Yeah, I think that they are trying to just like have something to keep Daniel a little bit grounded so he just doesn't go into
completely
just,
off the rails.
You know, yeah, completely nuts. So, Josh, it looks like next week we are going to see finally what ultimately ended up happening with our friends on The Walking Dead airplane.
Oh, the Flying Dead.
Flight 462,
yeah. And I'm really looking forward to that episode. Guys, we're going to do something unique with the podcast recapping that episode. We are going to record our recap, but only release it 1 minute at a time.
Yes.
Over the course of next week. So you should be really, really pumped about that. The Road Away from the Flying Dead is what we are calling it.
Yes, we've been waiting for this. So very excited to see what happens there. Josh, are you excited? Does it remind you at all of Lost to see this crash plane next week?
You know, there's been so many shows that are, you know, ever since Lost came out that have tried to capture the Lost magic. You know, you think about, I don't know, Flash Forward. You think about The Event. You think about all of these. You think about V, you think about these shows that tried to kind of be in the Lost mold after Lost came out. But for my money, it's hard to think about a show that's like just like literally doing the airplane on the island thing in the wake of Lost. I'm sure that it exists, but I feel like that's fun. I'm curious, like I hope that there's some Lost homage going on. I hope that it's winking and nodding at that because that's so clear. That would be really great to see. I'm looking forward to it. You know, I didn't love The Flying Dead because of the way that it was paced out. And I have not gone and watched it all in one chunk. I will try and do that before Fear the Walking Dead episode 3, just so that I can be completely up to date on that, because I'm sure that we're going to see some of the characters from that thing in this episode. But yeah, just overall, I hope that it's, you know, I hope that it's a winking and nodding homage to Lost, because that would be really fun to see in The Walking Dead.
All right. So that's coming up next week. Josh, anything else you want to talk about for Fear the Walking Dead through 2 episodes of season 2?
No, we got to keep it a little bit short today. Rob, you've got stuff to do. I've got work to do as well. So unfortunately, we got to keep it on the shorter side. But sorry that we are a little bit late. I think that now we're locked in. I think that you and I had a really good talk parsing out these first two episodes. I think that next week's episode should be pretty fun to recap.
Yeah, and hopefully, I'm hoping that this show begins to find itself a bit more here in season two. I know they're sort of establishing this world on the water, but I kind of feel like that they need to pick up the pace a little bit here in season two.
I do not disagree.
Okay. All right, Josh, what are you going to do for the hashtag? Is it Segan?
Segan is good. I like that.
That not JSS Abigail?
That's also really good.
Yeah. Let's go with Segan. I think that's the shortest and that's the cleanest.
Yeah.
So we'll go with that. All right, Josh. What else is going on here on Post Show Recaps right now?
So many things are happening right now. The road to Westeros has officially started. We are traveling towards Game of Thrones Season 6 premiere on Sunday, April 24th. I'm basically living and breathing Game of Thrones right now for my full-time work. I'm excited to get into that on a podcasting level. We've recorded the entire road to Westeros. We are releasing one podcast every day leading up to Game of Thrones, and I think it's really fun podcasting. I had a great day recording that with you, Rob. I think people are going to really enjoy listening to it. So that's really the big thing. You know, we're very, very, very close to Game of Thrones.
They're short, bite-sized previews of each different storyline going on for Game of Thrones Season 6. I hope you enjoy that on postshowrecaps.com. Make sure you don't miss any of our podcasting we're doing right now, plus Better Call Saul finale coming up for us later on tonight. So a lot going on there. postshowrecaps.com/iTunes or search Post Show Recaps in your favorite podcatcher. All right, Josh, anything else?
Nope.
All right, we will talk to you guys next week. Take care, everybody. Bye.